Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to a special PAX East 2020 edition of our one-on-one interview series. I am your King Baby Doc Evan Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. This year, we have 11 wonderful interviews from some of the best in both indie and AAA gaming talking about their upcoming titles. From WayForward's Shantae and the Seven Sirens and Tripwire's Manhunter to the likes of Devolver Digital and Tiny Build rewriting the online multiplayer book with Fall Guys and Ramen, today's episode showcases more of the best that this year's PAX East had to offer, and then some. So, get comfortable and prepare to con out with our PAX East 2020 one-on-one interview special.
Folks, what a great way to start off PAX East. I'm here with Christopher Shanley of WayForward, who just showed me Shantae and the Seven Sirens, which, by the way, Shantae is one of my absolute favorite video game series. So thank you so much for joining me here on B3 Crew. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's day one of PAX, and it's been a great start so far.
Now, you actually showed, you've actually released a demo of this game, I believe, on Apple Arcade, and I'm curious how the feedback from that demo has been.
The feedback has been very good. So right now on Apple Arcade, you can actually play about the first half of the game. We call it part one. So you can kind of play through the first couple of dungeons, explore some of the overworld, but only kind of scratch the surface of the story.
Gotcha. So tell us a little bit about the story of the Seven Sirens.
So Shantae finds herself in a whole new environment. She is invited to a tropical island to learn more about what it takes to be a guardian genie for a town. She meets other half genies and a whole slew of new characters, but of course, as always happens, she finds out that there's a bit of a mystery going on with who are the Seven Sirens. That's all I'll tease you with for now, but it's a really, really interesting story that digs a little deeper into the wider world and the deeper lore.
So this is a brand new world, something that we haven't seen in like Pirate's Curse or Half Genie Hero or Risky's Revenge.
Exactly, yes. The very opening of the game is she and her friends, Bolo and Sky, and Uncle Mimic, are on their way to this tropical island. So we're not in Scuttletown, we're not in Sequinland.
But we do have some familiar people showing up, of course. I did see Risky right there in a little miniature boss fight there.
Yes, Risky is definitely up to her old dastardly ways. Obviously, we teamed up with her during Pirate's Curse, but she returned to her nefarious pirate ne'er-do-wellings in Half-Genie Hero.
Of course.
As you can see in the demo, she shows up and is taunting Shantae, and Shantae's trying to figure out what, if anything, Risky has to do with the disappearance of the other Half-Genies.
So what is new gameplay-wise regarding Shantae and the Seven Sirens?
There's quite a bit. So one thing that we have done is we've returned to kind of the classic gameplay of Shantae. In Half-Genie Hero, we kind of explored a bit of a different kind of makeup of the game, where you had instanced levels more like a Mega Man than a traditional Metroidvania.
Oh, okay.
So we've returned to Metroidvania style of gameplay. So we've got an overworld, we've got multiple dungeons or labyrinths, we've got multiple towns. But the key things that we've done are we've introduced new types of magic. So there's now fusion magic as well as dance magic. We've introduced monster cards, which are randomly dropped by enemies, and they're collectible. If you collect a set, you can equip them to add a buff to your character, so you might get a faster run speed or stronger hair whips or things like that.
So it's practically a whole revamped system for Shantae regarding like leveling up and such.
Yeah, very much so. There's a lot of traditional mechanics that fans of the series will recognize, but a lot of new stuff that we hope they'll like.
For people who are unfamiliar with Shantae, like, what's something that will bring them in to be checking out Shantae this time around?
Well, if they're a fan of a Metroidvania, we like to think that we're huge fans of Metroidvanias, and then we try and do them justice with Shantae. But the key things that we're really well known for is our wonderful animation and our sense of humor. I mean, the game's hysterical. It's a lot of fun. It's got pitch-perfect controls and great level design. It's just just a fun joy to play.
And speaking of animation, you got probably one of my favorite anime studios to actually do the opening of Studio Trigger. Yeah. And I'm curious, how did that come to be?
So Matt Bozon, who's the game director and co-creator of Shantae, has an animation background. Yeah, we love animation and anime, and we're huge fans of Kill la Kill and the work that they've been doing on other games right now, such as Indivisible and stuff like that. So we were just incredibly lucky that we reached out and they were interested in working with us.
I'm pretty sure this question is asked many times, but with working with Studio Trigger, has the thought or has the idea of maybe a Shantae anime come up in conversation?
Internally in the office, we would love to have a cartoon or an anime of Shantae. I mean, it would be our dream to have, you know, a Saturday morning cartoon of Shantae. No current plans. I wish I would love to announce something, but unfortunately no plans yet. But it is a dream of ours to one day do that.
For my final question, of course, a little bit similar to one of the ones I already asked, why should people be diving into Shantae and the Seven Sirens?
It's an incredible game. It's a joy to play. It's really fun. It's really funny. Beautiful animation, great characters. I think everyone should play Shantae, but I'm a little biased.
Well, no, I agree with you. Like, I love the Shantae series, and I believe it's coming out in the springtime, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's coming out this spring. We'll be having it come out for PS4, Steam, Xbox One, of course the Nintendo Switch, and then we'll be adding the second half of the game onto Apple Arcade.
Fantastic. Chris, thank you so much for joining me here on B3 Crew. And listeners, if you have Xbox Live, you can get Half Genie Hero for free for the second half of March, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. It's great. Joining Games with Gold.
Excellent. Chris, thank you once again. Best of luck with the rest of PAX East, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with Shantae in the very near future. Matthew White of Whitehorn Digital here on the PAX East floor. Welcome to B3Crew.com. How are you doing today?
Hey, great. Thank you so much for coming by.
So tell me a little bit about Whitehorn Digital.
Whitethorn, actually.
Whitethorn.
Okay, we get that a lot. Yeah, so we're a publisher. We specialize in indie games that are approachable, digestible, stress-free experiences. We like to say pleasant games, things like Harvest Moon, Stardew Valley, that kind of feeling.
I got that really well with the game that I just demoed, Lake, which tells the story of a woman coming back to her old town and delivering mail. It was very relaxing to play a game like that.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, Lake is from a developer called Gameus in the Netherlands. They previously did Turmoil, which is sort of an oil baron simulator on Steam. It's a narrative adventure that takes place over a few weeks in a small town in Oregon. As you mentioned, the idea is that the titular character, Meredith, is at kind of a crossroads in life. And over the course of the few weeks there, you will experience a few different conversations, meet a crew of characters, and ultimately resolve that kind of conflict.
Very nice, and I love the atmosphere that the game has, from the beautiful, serene scenery and, like, The music, too. The music is amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we someone yesterday called it a chill Death Stranding, and I thought that was pretty good. It's like...
It kind of reminded me a little bit of the acoustic elements of, like, Frank Turner. I don't know if you ever listened to him or not.
Oh, no, actually. We've gotten Firewatch, we've gotten Life is Strange, sort of Campo Santo vibes, and yeah, we're thrilled with these kinds of comparisons, because those are all games we love, so...
It's really cool. I love what you're doing with it so far. I'm looking forward to seeing what it's going to be like in 2021, correct?
Yeah, so right now the earliest you would see it would be the absolute end of 2020, but 2021 is kind of the window. Mm-hmm. We don't have an official exact launch date yet. Be thrilled to provide you with one as soon as we do.
Very nice, very nice. And the other game that I got to try out, which is a little bit of Overcooked meat Spirited Away, Onsen Master.
Yeah, so Onsen Master is from a group called Waking Oni. It's a very small development team of three folks. It's meant to be exactly as you said, sort of a Overcooked multiplayer or local multiplayer or single player game where you manage a series of onsen around a fictional island and deal with yokai and monsters and that sort of thing. So it's very Japanese inspired, has a story mode as well to traverse the entire island.
It's a very cute game, and it does keep you on the toes, because you have to constantly clean, you got to make sure that the yokai isn't making too much mischief.
Yeah.
It's really nice, and I know it's very, very early in the build, but from what I've seen so far, it looks really, really cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we maintain that games can be challenging, but not punishing. So even this one, it's, you know, even if you screw up, it's not really too, there's no major punishment to you, you don't lose, that kind of thing. So Overcooked or games like that, you know, they are challenging, but you don't feel bad when you fail. That it's, we just never want gamers to feel like they have to get good, that sort of thing.
Exactly. So what else is Whitethorn Digital planning in the near future?
Yeah, we have quite a few game releases this year, actually. A few of them showing here on the show floor. Calico is a cat cafe simulator due out in October that's over in the mini booth currently.
Oh, wow.
We also have Starcrossed, which is a two-player action arcade game starring magical girls.
Yeah, I actually played that over at the Made MA party the other day. That was excellent.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's a team from, I think, Worcester, I want to say. They're really near here. And I think many of them have moved now. They went to school here. That did a soft launch onto Steam on February 14th. And it'll come to consoles at the end of March. So you should see that pretty soon.
Excellent. Matt, thank you so much for joining me here on BeatTheCrew.com. For more information, where can people find all the stuff from Whitethorn Digital?
Yeah, of course. You can find us at WhitethornDigital.com or on most social media as Whitethorn Games.
Excellent. Thank you once again. Best luck with the rest of PAX East.
Appreciate it.
We had a difficult winter. We had a rough few months. And when the storms came in off the coast, it felt like they broke everything on us at once.
Folks, if you're a guy like me, you love crazy Japanese game shows. And I'm here with Jeff, who's showing off his latest game at the Devolver booth, Fall Guys. Welcome to B3Crew.com. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great today.
So, Fall Guys, of course, one of my favorite shows back in college was MXC, which was the American version of Takeshi's Castle. So, what did that play a huge influence on the creation of Fall Guys?
Yeah, it played a massive influence on it. So, we've seen a few things happen. We've seen the Battle Royale genre is, like, obviously in its ascendancy. We are terrible at most Battle Royale games, so we wanted to make a game that we could have stand a chance of winning.
Right.
And also, you know, we would look to our past. Like you say, Takeshi's Castle, MXC, Total Wipeout, all of these, like, big obstacle course game shows, and we just thought, well, we should probably make something like that, because that seems like it'd be really fun.
So, the whole game aspect, of course here, we're using NPCs for some of the some of the players, but for right now, up to 60 players online can compete in this game.
Yeah, 60 players online, full physics, ragdolling, getting knocked about, loads of things being thrown at them. It's all working. We're kind of like pushing towards release in the summer at the moment, and it's super chaotic and super brilliant.
So right now you have how many game modes right now are in there? You have various different rounds. You have we'll explain to my listeners the kind of rounds that people can expect to see in this.
Yeah, so when you think about the rounds in this game, it's not about, like, apart from the final rounds, it's really not about, like, having one single winner. It's about just not being the worst person in the round, you know, because all we're doing is over, like, four or five rounds whittling people down until we get to, like, maybe 10, 20 people, and then we'll throw you into a final round where one person can win. So, like, all of the things are, like, very simple ideas. Like, we have one called Tail Tag, where half the people start with tails, half do not. You can steal the tail from someone else if you do not have a tail. And at the end of 2 minutes, if you've got a tail, you get to go through to the next round. We want these things to be super accessible. We have like roughly around like 25 locked in at the moment. We're obviously aiming for a full 30 come the launch in the summer, and we're going to be keeping on adding rounds as the game continues.
All right, so you actually have 30 different sorts of games that you're working on for Fall Guys. That's fantastic. So I'm reckoning you're pulling, you know, various ideas from Japanese game shows, and like, what is the most insane one you have concocted thus far?
Okay, so like, there's, well, it doesn't, none of these things sound insane. I think, you know, you've just played Fall Guys, like, yeah, there's some very simple ideas there which just come alive when you're playing with a bunch of other people. I would say, like, one of my favorites is Rock and Roll, in which, like, the Fall Guys are split into like three teams, and they each have to push a boulder up a giant hill and past obstacles. It sounds like super basic. It's the most ridiculous and hilarious thing I've seen ever. Like, it is, it has all of like the joy, the triumph, the tragedy, the failure, everything you could possibly want for an experience.
That is awesome. So you're here at PAX East. What's been the feedback like for Fall Guys?
We have been absolutely overwhelmed. We always know coming to PAX, you're going to run into like really good people, really enthusiastic people. But even so, like, we've had back-to-back queues, like circling around the booth. Everyone has been waiting a long time, and then like maybe getting knocked out and still seeming to like absolutely enjoy the experience. We're feeling a lot of love, and we're feeling really happy about it.
So you're saying that the game comes out in the summer.
Yeah.
You convinced me to get it, but for my listeners who have yet to be convinced yet, tell them, why should they play Fall Guys?
You should play Fall Guys because there's nothing else quite like it at the moment. It's super accessible. You can play it with your kids, you can play it with your parents, like anyone can come in. It's super fun. I have been watching the same four rounds played for 48 hours now, and I get something new out of it every time. Fall Guys is going to be amazing. We can't wait to share it with you.
So what's been the most epic finish you've seen so far here at Fall Guys today?
I gotta tell you, like, the game that you were in, like, there was like three people jumping for the crown at the end, and we actually had to wait for a server call to work out like who had actually won the game, because it was all so close, you know. And one of the nice things about like the queue kind of wrapping around the booth is that like everyone's an audience, and we're getting like the big, like, the screams and the cheers as the good stuff happens. So yeah, anything like that feels good.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining me here at B3Crew.com. Where can more people find information on Fall Guys?
They can go to Fall Guys. Wait, it's right behind me. Fall Guys Game on Twitter. They can follow Fall Guys Game on Twitter, and also FallGuys.com. We have a website now, so get onto that. We'll be updating as much as we possibly can, especially things are going to ramp up towards the summer.
Are you thinking future esports competitions?
You know, we never were at the start, but like, we just, you know, we were appealing to like a kind of a more like casual audience initially, knowing that like, hey, we're going to get some core gamers who like this. But we found that like the core gamers playing these simple games take it so seriously. Like, there's some incredible strats coming through. So right now, no, we're not ruling out esports. Why not? Let's see how it goes.
I mean, Devolver could create their own. Like, you have Fall Guys, you have Hee-Ho. They have plenty of titles that they could actually do this with.
I mean, it feels like this is a great idea we should be sharing right now.
Yes, exactly. I think I'm going to talk to the PR people about this right afterwards.
Please do.
All right, Jeff, thank you once again. And best of luck with Rex and PAX East. This is awesome. I look forward to seeing more of this in the near future.
Let the sun from my eyes, let it burn my back, let it shear through my thighs, I'll feel wide, wide open. Let the sun from my eyes, let it burn my back, at the beach in my dreams, but you're still...
I'm here in the All Ins gaming booth, just tried out Ghost Runner. I'm here with Derek, who helped make this game. Welcome to B3 Crew. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm fine. Really great today to be on the PAX.
So, Ghost Runner, holy crap. That this is a crazy motherfucking game. So, where did the idea for this game come from?
All in our company on One More Level, we are gamers, so it's just like a game we just always wanted to do, like a simulator of cybernetic warrior, where you got all the movement mechanics like wall runs, dodging the bullets in the air. So we're just trying to make it and use our experience in that kind of game, because our previous game, Ghost Trigger, was also a game which got the same gameplay mechanics like one hit, one kill. Mm-hmm. So we just use it and take it to the different perspective, like first person.
Yes, so I just played the first level. Technically, it was a tutorial.
Yeah.
Super hard, super crazy. And then I'm told that because that's a tutorial, this is the easiest part in the video game. So what were some of the big challenges regarding upping the difficulty without that feeling of, you know, making the gamers feel frustrated and whatnot?
The main point is that you will not get a frustration for the players is that you get an instant restart for the game, and we have got a very generous system of checkpoints. So if you even failed, you're going to restart right few seconds before you fail. So you just want to try again and again and be a faster, be better, try different things, try different approach, and it helps. Very rarely players feel frustrated of our game.
That's one of the things I did actually like about Ghost Runner is that when you're in this little area right there, especially during this tutorial, it's kind of open, so you're like, you can go this path, or you can try this path. If this doesn't work, maybe this will work. If that doesn't work, there's a third path over here. Maybe that might work. And I do like that sort of choice, because that way it gives you the opportunity to test the waters.
Yeah, well, I want to give the players some free exploration, so they're also in the game like skills for the players, so he can just try different stuff, maybe different approach to the level. It gets a little bit tactical in the game. It's not only about the skill, but also what you're going to do with this situation with you.
And it's also about the strategy, too, because, like you say, it's a one-hit kill, very similar to another game where one of the other people brought up, like, Hotline Miami, where you try to eliminate everybody on the board, but with one hit, you're gone. You're dead. So you have to figure out the strategy. Okay, there's this guy over there, and then there's this guy over there. What if I was to go around this route over there? It's a very thinking person's first-person tactical strategy, stabby, stabby, kill-kill kind of game.
Yeah, it's like moment-to-moment game, those situations where you must make micromanagements, like, micro decisions, like to just run on the wall and kill that guy, or to do some other stuff, try to hide, or find some power-up that you can give on the level.
So you're here at PAX Eats. What's been the feedback from the people that have been playing this game for you?
Oh, it's really great. Even for people that this game is not for them because it's aiming at the hardcore players, they understand that and tell that it's a real good fun for it.
Awesome. So how far along are you in production of Ghost Runner? Do you have a set release date for it?
Not really. We are aiming for sure for 2020. It's hard to tell if it's going to be third or fourth quarter of 2020, but this will be this year.
So, as I mentioned, we just played the tutorial aspect. Like, what's on the horizon in Ghost Runner? What can players expect when they dive into it?
There'll be much more. It was about 15 levels in the game. There'll be a few boss fights, so that will be also a very difficult part of the game. All the skills are going to be a skill check for you. What you learned from the levels now is a big exam for you that you're going to just prove it, you learn it.
So my final question then is, why should people dive into Ghost Runner?
Because it's quite something new on the market. If you are into some hardcore games and you want to dive into some cybernetic warrior with a melee weapon, so you don't gonna find anything like that.
And the game is Ghost Runner, coming out on PC and console too?
Yeah, of course.
On console too. Thank you so much for joining me here on B3Crew.com. For more information, where can people find Ghost Runner?
Follow us on the Twitter, our Facebook account, maybe on the Steam page. There are lots going stuff there, like some concept arts, some movie GIFs from the game, so they can get really crazy info from that.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me here, and best of luck with the rest of PAX East.
Oh, thank you very much.
Ich weiß nicht, wie ich heiße. Ich weiß nicht, wer ich bin. Weiß nicht, woher ich komme. Ich gehe, weiß nicht, wohin. Vergessen alle Tage, vergessen jede Nacht. Wo bin ich gewesen? Was hab ich gemacht? Wie hat das begonnen?
I'm here at the Joy Manufacturing Company Group, and I just tried out the demo of a game that I've been following for the past 3 years, Ambition and Minuet in Power, and I'm joined by the mastermind, Luther, who looks very elegant today.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So, how has progress been going with the creation of Ambition?
Progress has been going very well.
We recently ended up partnering with Humble Bundle's publishing division, and they've been absolutely fantastic to work with. Our full-time team is around 3 people, but we've expanded with contractors to around 9. As you played in the most recent demo, the music is finishing up. That's our composer, John Robert Matz, who is absolutely spectacular and very dedicated towards getting music that's authentic to the period. The final compositions are now coming in with the actual in-played instruments. As you can feel, like, the soul really comes into it.
Absolutely. So how much has ambition evolved from since it's been like 3 years since you actually first talked about this game?
Ambition has evolved significantly, and it's been interesting to see how, as we've iterated through the design, we've actually simplified things and pared them down to what we believe is most essential. While we originally had this sort of dungeon crawling party style, we found that it was detracting from the core fantasy, which is the core fantasy is going to parties, getting into arguments with people, dealing with social courtly politics and ruining people's lives. And so we simplified things down to its most core elements, which is credibility and peril. Having a high credibility helps you lie to people, and having a high peril is bad. If peril maxes out, something awful happens. Of course, this changes from chapter to chapter. In like chapter 1, if your peril maxes out, you are like socially not doing well. Like, you lose a lot of reputation with people. Whereas in chapter 3, that could mean a maxed out peril could mean getting guillotined. Because, you know, the stakes are constantly escalating as the country marches towards revolution.
That core storytelling aspect has stayed true for the past 3 years with the whole trying to find yourself which part of, you know, society that you want to side with, basically.
Absolutely. The most important thing is to make sure you end up on the winning side of history. And for those who are not aware, one of the things that makes ambition distinct is while it may take place in the French Revolution, the actual revolution is inevitable, but whether or not it succeeds is not. Depending on how things shake out, the crown might actually hold on to power. And let's just say you really, really do not want to be in a place with a failed coup d'etat. The results are often bloody.
So does that mean like someone like Marie Antoinette might still have her head by the end of this game?
It is very possible, and instead it would be people like Robespierre, Mirabeau, and Lafayette with their heads on the chopping block instead.
Ooh, that's kind of interesting. Not gonna lie, I actually would like to see an alternative sort of thing, and that's kind of cool that you added that. So, like, how much research did you put into, like, the whole French Revolution aspect into this game?
I would like to boast and say that our game is ruthlessly well-researched. We have been devouring books, fashion plates from the period, listening to a musical composition that was authentic to the era. Like, one thing you'll notice is that if you are at a crown party, they're actually listening to music that's from the late Baroque period, which is slightly out of fashion. It's to indicate that the crown is sort of losing a grip on what is actually happening anymore. They're behind the times in their own country.
Wow. So, the past 3 years you've been working on this game. What's been one of the biggest challenges with creating a game like Ambition?
I think one of the biggest challenges is when you're so head down in a game, it's hard to look up and see the game how someone else would see it. Because, you know, I see every tiny little change, every tiny little imperfection, and then we have people sit down and play the game, and they just breeze right through it, and like, oh, okay. And, like, you know, when you've played a game, when you've made your own game for long enough, you don't know if it's fun anymore because you look at the exact same thing day after day after day. So, you know, it can be a little harrowing sometimes, but I've been very pleased by the results we've seen so far.
So how have people been reacting to Ambition today so far at PAX East?
So far, the results have been very positive. We've had a lot of butts in chairs, so to speak, and people who walk away from the game tend to walk away with a very positive impression. One of the nice things is that our aesthetic is very noticeable. And, you know, we tend to stand out from the crowd, and I'm very much appreciating that.
Absolutely. So, how close to completion are you for Ambition?
While I cannot comment on a release date yet, I can say that if you wishlist us on Steam or the Humble Bundle store, you'll be notified of all the changes as they come along.
Awesome. The game is Ambition, a Minuet, and Power Luther. Thank you for joining me here once again on Boston Bass Brigade. It's rare that I get a second chance to talk to somebody. Like, from the start of the game to the near completion of it. And this is looking beautiful. You should be very proud of the hard work you guys have been putting into it.
Thanks so much. It's great to speak with you again.
Party just isn't a party without me. So for all who gather without me.
It's always a carnival when Tiny Build Games is around, and I'm here with Keith, who's showcasing a hell of a lot of great titles. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good. First off, sorry for interrupting your mac and cheese meal.
It's all good. I'm all good.
But I love your setup here. Every year you come around here, you give an experience at your booth. You're not just showing games. You're having people have fun at these sort of like carnival titles, and they can actually win things here with like tokens. It's awesome.
Yeah, so playing games, earn a token just for trying out demos of our games, playing claw machines to win prizes. We have a hammer that you can hit. And then you redeem the totally reliable coins at the merch booth for any of our merch there.
Yeah. The only thing that's missing, have you ever seen the Japanese arcade game where you flip the table?
No, I haven't flipped a table.
What you do is, like, you angrily flip a table, and, like, in on the arcade thing, like, all the stuff flies off, and you try to create as much chaos as possible. It's amazing. I think there's some Dave and Buster's that have it.
Oh, okay.
But anyways, enough about that. Let's talk about the games that you're actually showing up here at Tiny Build. First and foremost, we got here a ramen, which could possibly be a big esports title in the near future.
We're going to try for it, you know. There's some room in the market to have another, like, Splatoon-ish type game, right?
Yeah, so explain to our listeners what this game is like, because it is very bonkers.
Yeah, so up to 8 players online. There's a couple different modes that are like free-for-all or teams. We're showing off, here at PAX, we're showing off 3 different modes. One of them is Broth Battle, which is basically like Team Deathmatch or Slayer. And that can be free-for-all or teams. We have Claim Chowder, which is King of the Hill.
Yeah.
That's also free-for-all or teams. And then the last mode is Meatball, which is basically like you hop on a meatball and you roll to the enemy's base and it explodes. Your goal is gaining as much points as you can. The meatball explosion is worth 25 points. Every kill is worth 1. So there's a lot of like madness and killing and trying to score the meatball into the enemy goal. It's a madness of fun.
And that is the one that I personally experienced, and it was a blast. Even though I lost, it was still a lot of fun. And I think that's one of the big things that's going to draw people into ramen, besides it being naked people throwing pasta at one another.
Yeah, there's a lot of unique aspects to it. The game is, you know, there's a lot of like cool customized characters that make you really unique. You have, you know, the awkwardness, but the silly of having the naked men where they're just wearing an apron to cover up, and you're just throwing hot soup at each other. What's not to like?
Yeah, exactly. Now, is there going to be a story mode for this? I'm curious.
Oh, man. It's so early in development, I don't actually know. There's, I think we're within 6 months of development, and we still have another year to go. So, later at the end of 2020, we're going to try to release the game. If the game needs a little bit more, we're definitely not going to release it too early. We're going to make sure it gets out with everything that's needed. So maybe there might be a storyline down the road, but at the moment we're just focusing on the arena aspect.
Let's talk about a game that is very close to launching, a totally reliable delivery service, or Turds for short.
Yeah, so I'm the producer for that one. It's basically 1-4 player local or online. So you can do up to 4 player split screen, so you'll have that couch co-op back that a lot of viewers want. There's over 100 missions in the game delivering from point A to point B. You have over 25 vehicles in the game. The world is massive open world where you can just travel amongst and do anything you want. There's lots of like side objectives and just explorable areas that you'll be able to just crash vehicles into and explore this giant physics realm and just have a blast with your friends.
Not to mention the ragdoll mechanics. They're just everyone just flopping around like crazy.
So yeah, delivering the packages and flying the vehicles, you have to maneuver around having this physics engine with the ragdoll effects. So you have just arms and legs flying over the place. You're trying to drive vehicles that go way too fast for their own good, so you have tons of mistakes happening just trying to keep the packages safe or causing mayhem with your friends. So, yeah.
It reminded me a little bit of, with the whole grabbing aspect, it reminded me a lot of Octodad when that came out a couple of years ago.
So, yeah, there's a lot of references. A lot of the developer influence was based off of, like, Goat Simulator, GTA with the open world and being able to explore. You have, like, Human Fall Flat aspects where you have, you know, the grabbing with one trigger, and with your right arm is your right trigger, your left arm is your left trigger. Just going from there and trying to maneuver all of these different buttons while trying to get to the location. So.
Yes, and I believe that's coming out on April 1st.
April 1st, Epic Game Store, Xbox, PlayStation, and Switch.
Terrific. Now, you also are showing off two other games that are very early in development, but they're pretty impressive right now. Undungeon, I believe, is one of them.
Undungeon is one of our super... Well, it was a Kickstarter for a while, so it did really well. We picked them up, and they've been in development for a little bit. Yeah, that one, we have actually a few pixel art games that we're showing, so it's like Undungeon, Black Skylands, and Mayhem. So there's a bunch of that nostalgic, tiny build pixel art from like some of our earlier days with like Punch Club and stuff like that. So yeah, so Undungeon is in the process. It's a hack and slash top-down RPG type game, so you're one of, I think, seven interdimensional beings trying to protect these lands. And the game is really difficult. The hack and slash is not as easy as you think it would be. So you'll struggle getting your way through, but it's a blast.
Awesome. So what else can people expect from Tiny Build in the near future?
So we have six games at the show. Ramen, which we spoke about, Totally Reliable, Undungeon. Then I said Black Skylands, which is also another top-down shooter, pixel art style, navigating these skylands where you're having to jump from ship to ship. You grow this farm base in your sky island. You have, it's one giant open world, so you're navigating through quests and going through day-night cycles and different environments to explore all these islands. And you'll find a bunch of different enemies that'll try to stop you while you're doing your exploration. You also have Mayhem, which is our 2.5D game, so it's very pixel art style, flat, but still 3D. You're a little kid being in a town where it's being overrun by radioactive animals, so it plays a lot like a Stranger Things feel with creepy things going on, but has a lot of that same stylized art as like Legend of Zelda, where you're exploring all these different zones, solving puzzles to get to a much larger puzzle room. And, yeah, and instead of the combat phase that you would normally expect in a game like that, it's a lot of defensive maneuvering. So while you're solving puzzles, if there's, like, a radioactive squirrel that's chasing you, you're going to want to throw an acorn to distract him. And if there's an electric radioactive bunny, you need to throw a carrot. That'll distract him. Kind of a lot of those things happening at the same time, so you're using a lot of different sides of your brain at the same time.
Awesome. So, for more information on Tiny Build, where can our listeners find it?
So, you can find all of our games at tinybuild.com, but our biggest one where we're always posting is Twitter. You can find us at Tiny Build, and then we also have Facebook and Instagram as well, so you can find us pretty much on any social media.
Awesome. Keith, thank you so much for joining me here in Boston Bass Brigade. Go back and enjoy your mac and cheese, and I think I'm going to go back up to the press room and wear that nice little bathrobe you gave us.
Enjoy.
Right then, put 50 chilies.
From the API goes red with a point. Baker's voice is all we love. Past the dawn of voice. How crazy all the people
I love being immersed by great video games, especially virtual ones. And I'm here with Eric from Pixel Reef, who is showing off the demo for Paper Beast. Welcome to B3Crew.com. How are you doing today?
Very well. I'm very happy to be here at PAX and presenting this game. And we worked on it since 4 years.
So tell us a little bit about Pixel Reef. Like, how was it founded?
I founded it because I'm an independent video game creator, and I want to work in a team. So to work with a team, you need a company, and I found this company to create Paper Beast first.
So where did the idea for Paper Beast come from?
it comes from the fascination of wildlife, because in this game you will discover an imaginary wildlife that has born out of binary data via internet, but it looks really organic and it's quite, it has a poetic flavor with origami looks.
So tell me a little bit about the concept of paper beads.
The concept, why there is paper creature and well, I was speaking of wildlife, but it's one side of a subject, and the other side is data. We are living in a world where there is a lot of data everywhere on our mobile phone, internet, everything. And sometimes it's a bit oppressing. I was speaking of this game about nature, but I had some idea about the game about data, and both mixed together, and I thought it would be very interesting to have an ecosystem that's born out of the data, but that's unknown by human.
So as the game progresses, do you find out why this world is the way it is?
Yes, you discover wildlife, but more than wildlife, a wide world with intrusion of data, and that is a kind of pressure over this wildlife. But the data is not the data from Google or a web page, it's just letter, just paper, it's very symbolic.
So I noticed how, like, when you interact with the paper beast creatures, like some interact with balls of paper, some just eat paper, others look very carnivorous to the other paper beast creatures.
Yes.
So is there this aspect where you have to try to save certain creatures from other sorts of more deadlier paper beasts?
Yes, it's to a player choice to interfere or not with their way of life. It's like being, let's say, in Africa when there is lion. You can let the lion eat the antelope. But there is a... It's quite peaceful. Globally, it's already a peace. Most of the creatures are eating plants, eating ground. Some creature drop some soil or eat soil. Depends.
It's very cool. So one of the big reasons why I was drawn to this game was because, as we were talking through the demo, we share a mutual friend with the band Sushi Mamire. So how did you get them involved with Paper Beast? Like, how did you guys first meet?
Paper Beast, from the beginning, need to be a crazy universe, because there is this data, there is the creature, and I wanted to have insert of rock, punk rock music, which is totally a side of the universe. So with this weird tape recorder that has this music and has an important role during the adventure. So I wanted some very punchy rock music, and I was looking for a kind of Japanese music, but I don't know what, I don't know which music. But one day Pascal, our art director, was looking on things on YouTube, and that was Speedy Wonder from Sushi Mamiro.
Yes.
And said, yeah, it's kind of psychedelic and punk rock and very a lot of energy. It should be really nice to have this for the start of a game, because for the start of a game you there is the clip of Speedy Wonder. Not the visual clip, but the music, and you interact with physics, with their music, and it is at this moment that you go into Paper Beast world. So, that's exactly what I want. Speedy Wonder should be really good. So I wrote to the contact address on Sushi Mirror website, and Marie Kono answered me that she was interested, and I say, well, why not create some over music during the game, but to continue with this special mood. So there is two other tracks in the game that has been specially composed for the game, and it brings a lot of craziness. There's, for example, a creature that's born out of tape, the tape recorder. You have a strip, a black strip of tape that creates a creature, and it's great while there is this punk rock music from it's kind of Punk San. You know Punk San, the music?
Yes, I know Punk San.
So, you know Punk San 1, Punk San 2, and there is Punk San 3. Yeah.
Yes. That's awesome. You know, you couldn't have picked a better band to represent Paper Beast. Because, you know, they're this sort of like, they're very cute punk rock, but they're a powerful, cute sort of punk rock. Yes. And I feel like that really fits well with this cute, mysterious sort of world that you have created with Paper Beast.
And there is, we are speaking of the music, and there is another composer named Holly Porter that create all the ambience music. And so Holly Porter create the music of the world and of the data and the whole atmosphere. And Touche Mamere music is more the joyful and vibrant the life.
Right. It reminds you of like the life that used to be around in this planet.
Yes.
That brimmingness, that excitement.
Yes.
And the Paper Beast seem to be trying to remind you of those old times.
Yes.
It's really cool. So, do you have a release date yet for Paper Beast?
It needs to be confirmed by in a few weeks, because we are in a submission stage to Sony, so it depends of when it will be validated. And once it's validated, we can firmly say, okay, that will be the release date. But it's just a question of 1 month. Between one or 2 months, it will be released.
All right, very, very cool. And I look forward to seeing more of this world that you've created with Paper Beast. Eric, thank you so much for joining me here on B3 Crew. Where can more people find out more information on Paper Beast?
They can find information on the Pixel Reef website or on the Sony website.
Awesome. Eric, thank you once again, and best of luck with the rest of PAX East.
Thank you very much. It was very nice to meet you and to speak to you.
Nice to meet you, too. I'm here at the Sometimes Always Monsters booth, the sequel to Always Sometimes Monsters, and I'm here with probably the mastermind of the whole thing, Justin. Welcome to Boston Bass Brigade. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm surviving. Good show.
Yes, it has been a great show. So, you announced this, what, almost 3 years ago, and now it's getting closer to its release. So, how's it feel to be near the end of its production cycle?
Yeah, it's actually been in development for about 6 years total.
Really?
Yeah. We first, I think, announced it like 2015 or whatever, and then we were really close to release in 2016. But then things weren't right with it, and we wanted to do more, and we felt like the audience needed a little more time to digest the first game. So we ended up abruptly delaying it for almost 5 years.
Gotcha. So how does Sometimes Always Monsters connect with the storyline of Always Sometimes Monsters?
So first and foremost, you can bring your save file from the first game into the new one and just carry the continuity straight ahead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it's also, I consider the games like two halves of a circle. The first one is like, you know, you're downtrodden, you start the day, you're evicted, life's really tough. I kind of like the analogy of it's climbing up the ladder. And this one, it's totally different. It's a lot more fun and, like, joyous, but you're kind of on your way to a doom anyway. You know, you start successful and married, life's going really well, but you're definitely on your way down the slide.
So Always is going up the peak, Sometimes is going down the peak.
Correct, yeah.
Oh, wow. So, like, with you delaying the game for a really long time, like, what did you do to help, like, evolve the world of of Always Monsters?
So we added a lot of, like, it's a lot of background technical stuff that went into really improving the performance of the game. So, like, we improved the resolution, which is where we're using a really ancient engine that doesn't really support a lot of things people expect on modern games. So we ended up having to slap the hell out of it and, like, hack a bunch of stuff into making it do what we wanted. We added a lot of new content, refined some bits, and really focused on this narrative of, you know, you get accused of being a plagiarist and somebody's really not happy with that and kind of seeking to destroy your life in the process.
Kind of like that Stephen King story, Rear Window.
I guess.
But yeah, I found that really cool. Now, you're doing some a little bit interesting, or for some people who are interested, you're actually letting people play the end of the game. But what I like about it is that even though you're playing the end, it's still very mysterious.
Right, yeah. So the game is highly variable. So we felt like showing off the ending isn't really that much of a spoiler because there's so many different things that can happen. And, like, you might not even get to that sequence. You could actually not even go on the bus tour at all. Like, the game is so variable, you can just choose to stay at home and never run into any of this stuff. So we wanted to show off this, like, really exciting section of the game. And we felt confident in our ability to do that because the game just has that much variety that, you know, you might, it's not really a spoiler.
It reminds me of when I was, like, a little kid and I was reading, like, those young Indiana Jones Chronicle books where you, like, choose your own adventure. Like what you just said about choosing not to go on the bus, it reminds me of one of the choose your own where, like, you don't even go on the adventure at all.
Yeah, that's kind of the point. Like, so we like this design philosophy called the right of refusal, right? So as long as the player has the right to decline something, then you retain a sense of agency and power in the game.
That is awesome. And, you know, just playing with this demo, it makes me more interested in the world that you have crafted. And if people even are trying, like, the ending, it's going to give them more questions and answers, of course. And thankfully, that'll be like, I want to see what happens next, or rather, what happens before all of this happens.
Right, yeah, there is still stuff that comes after. Well, I mean, depending on the ending. And there's tons of stuff that comes before. There's 5 cities to explore, you know, lots of relationships to deal with, lots of new characters to meet and stories to see.
Now, one of the things that I'm liking, and I know it's a lot of extra work for you, is that you're monitoring what people are typing in, and you're thinking about, maybe I should add this little animation here.
Yeah, actually, yesterday somebody asked if there was a laundromat in the game, and we didn't have one yet, because, like, you can change your outfits and stuff like that, and we didn't have a way for you to, like, easily clean your clothes, so, yeah, we added a laundromat yesterday.
Wow. Odds are it's not in the build here. It's the one on your computer right now.
It should be around on them.
Wow.
We update it nightly.
You're fast.
We're very experienced.
Wow. I'm kind of blown away by that. So we're coming to close to the release, I believe, on April 2nd, correct?
Yep, we've got about a month left.
So why should people dive into Sometimes Always Monsters, even those who haven't even played Always Sometimes Monsters?
If you're interested in a story that lets you really be in control and have a lot of choice, that's the best reason. But it's also a really great narrative about being a creator and being somebody who's, like, put their, you know, soul on the line in terms of creating a work, but also those who have felt maybe a bit of an imposter syndrome after they've begun doing something and felt like, you know, maybe I don't deserve all this I've got.
Oh, wow. I've kind of felt that way sometimes, too, in my line of work. But, Justin, thank you so much for joining me here on Boston Bass Brigade. For more information on Sometimes Always Monsters, where can people find it?
You can go to vagabonddog.com, and you can pre-order the game there. We also have a Discord, discord.gg/VD.
Justin, thank you once again. Best of luck with the rest of PAX East and on the launch of Sometimes Always Monsters.
They take apart their bodies like toys for the local boys, because they're always there at the edge of the water. They come from the capital, these city girls go way down where the stones meet the sea. And all of you young girls, where do you hide? Down by the water, the restless tide.
Folks, how can I truly describe a game like Disc Room? Well, I have 2 of the developers here to do that for me. Please introduce yourselves to my fellow listeners.
My name is Kitty Gallis.
And I'm JW, and together with Terry and Doz, we're making Disc Room.
Yeah, and these are the same guys who created the hit game Minute. So thank you so much for joining me here on B3Crew.com. How is PAX East treating you?
So far, so good. I can't complain, really. It's been really fun showing off our new game, Disc Room. It got announced last week, but yeah, it's been a hell of a ride for sure.
Yeah, it's been scary, you know, like showing a new game. You never know if people are gonna get it, gonna like it, but so far we've seen nothing but happy faces. It's been great.
Yeah, because you just revealed it this past week, and you know, I wasn't too sure what to expect from it, but playing it for myself, it's crazy. It's almost, it's very competitive as to like how this game is set up. So for our listeners, tell us a little bit about the makings of this game.
So the quick explanation, the year is 2089, a giant disc appears floating next to Jupiter, and you're the poor scientist who has to go explore. And it's filled with deathly saw blades, and there's all these rooms in this interconnected maze that have different goals to open the doors, and you're the poor soul who has to make it through there and survive it. So you're basically just trying to not get torn apart by giant saw blades.
Right. It's got this sort of, top-down perspective, third-person strategy survival kind of horror? I don't want to know. Yeah. It's kind of a horror. You die horribly, of course.
Yeah, totally. So much of our inspiration is bad 70s and 80s sci-fi movies and just stuff like Cube or Event Horizon. It's just like something we really love, and this allows us to pour all of that into the game.
Right, and what's great about this game, too, is like despite its difficulty and everything like that, survival isn't the key aspect of the game. The whole thing about like trying to die X amount of times or be killed by certain sort of discs to get to the next room.
Yeah, so we have this unofficial tagline. It's called "What kills you makes you stronger." And like you learn to like deals that this that's kill you. Like you get certain abilities. And while you go to this spaceship and explore like the things that are going on, like the W said, came from our love from really good and bad sci-fi movies. You have this scene and often in sci-fi movies where someone enters the spaceship and they have no idea.
It's gonna be dangerous.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the thing where like a lot of games you die a lot, but they're really about surviving. So this room is a game that's also about dying.
You have all these sorts of things you need to do in order to unlock rooms. Thus far, what is the craziest, most challenging one you've come up with thus far?
So I think one of the fun, it's not in the demo, but one of the funniest one is you have to survive for less than 0 seconds. And it's up to the player to find out how to do that, right? But as you make it through the story and you get weird new abilities, you know, like reality starts to change a little bit. So we're adding that mystery, like part of it's a puzzle game almost as well.
So perhaps like time reverses or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not legally allowed to give you that answer. But yeah, we're doing fun stuff.
Yeah, and thus far, it's looking like a super fun game. I'm loving the aspect. I love the countdown. I love the simplistic animation style to it. Kind of got that sort of old school Newgrounds kind of feel to it. So for our listeners who want to know more information on Discworld, where can they find more info?
You can go to discroom.com and it will have anything you might need.
And I guess maybe the final question should have been, why should people play Discworld? Discroom! Oh my god. You're not doing a video game based on the famous Terry Pratchett novels. This is a game, Disc Room.
So, if you love science fiction, if you love a really challenging game, or if you're just, you know, someone who's really up for weird secrets, hard challenges, and getting in the zone in a game as quick as possible, we want to bring that for you.
Guys, thank you so much for joining me here on B3Crew.com. Please check out Disc Room, coming out this summer, correct?
2020.
All right. Sometime 2020. Thank you once again. Best of luck with the rest of PAX East, and hope you guys are having a ball.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hello, little boys, little toys. With the dreams you'll believe in. Crawling up the walls, running down your face. Razor sharp, razor clean. Feel the weapon sensation on your back with loaded guns.
I just experienced the Red Lantern from Timberline Studios, and I'm here with Lindsay from Timberline. Welcome to B3Crew.com. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
So, first of all, I saw this trailer about, what was it, a year ago on the Nintendo Nindies, and I was really taken aback by its style, the story, the narrative. So tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind the Red Lantern.
Yeah, it comes from when I was a tiny child. I was a little bit obsessed with Jack London and Gary Paulsen books, and kind of forgot about them for a long time. And a couple of years ago, I took a trip to Iceland, and I had planned to go dog sledding, and I'd completely forgotten that was a thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my god, I could do this. And so went out there, went to go do it. Unfortunately, the winds were 40 miles per hour, and it got canceled. And I was like, oh god. And then it just became like this weird obsession. And from that point forward, I was just like, there's something about dog sledding. I'd forgotten about it and like loved this, and started talking with one of my friends. And I was like, I want to do a narrative game. I think I want to explore dog sledding. He's like, yeah, okay. Let's talk about this. And so we jumped in and started making the game.
So did you ever finally get around to doing some dog sledding?
I have. I finally went up in Alaska a year and a half ago. I went during the summer, actually. So I had to do dry land dog sledding in like a little car. But it was still incredible. Since then, a bunch of my friends have also gone. And so everybody keeps sending me their videos about their experiences, which has been great.
Terrific, terrific. So tell me about the narrative behind the Red Lantern. Like, who are you playing and what is their purpose behind wanting to participate in this dog sledding aspect?
Yeah, so you play as the Musher. She was living in San Francisco, trying to become a doctor. It wasn't really working out. She was feeling a little bit like she was a disappointment to those around her. I think we can all relate. Sometimes you get in your head about like how you're doing in life. She decides to hit a reset button. She hits it a little harder than maybe you should.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? When I was a kid, I thought this was really cool. I had a neighbor who did it. She had a cabin up in Alaska. I'm sure she let me use it. She does let her use it, gives her a little hand-drawn map, and is like, you know, go up to Alaska, just go to where the snow meets the end of the road, and, you know, travel past some trees and some rocks, and you'll get to my cabin. You can adopt some dogs along the way. And so the Musher goes up there and is like, this is great. I've got my four dogs. We've got our squad. They all have, like, their own quirks and personalities. And she goes out there. Things don't quite go as easily as she had hoped.
Right. And then what you find out is that it's one of those situations where, like, you play the game, but you don't exactly die. You kind of, like, reset or wake up from a horrible nightmare and realize, whoa, this is what could go wrong. So I best not try that again.
Yep, exactly. So the whole idea is about becoming more and more prepared as you go. We really want you to, like, have that feeling of exploration and curiosity while you're in the world, but then being like, oh my god, these are terrible things that could happen. And I think we've also experienced that before. And so you become more and more prepared as you play.
Right, because you have to watch everything. You have to watch how many bullets you have, how much food you have, how full your belly is. Like, I found out the worst way possible that you shouldn't be mushing on an empty stomach. And what I like, too, is that you've added all these different personalities, too, with the dogs that you are in charge with. And from what you were telling me, there are actually backstories to each dog, correct?
Yeah, each dog has their own little personality and storyline. So that's what we really want to have, is you can basically help them come into their own and find who they are, too. We've got a dog, Barkley, who tends to bite before he barks. And you have to help him find his voice so he learns to not just run into battles when he doesn't need to.
So, like I said earlier, you revealed the trailer for this on the Nintendo Nindies. And what was the feedback from that big reveal when you showcased it there?
It was pretty incredible, in all honesty. We were amazed at how many people were like, I didn't know I needed this, but I need it. And that, like, really helped us, because we thought we were out there making kind of a crazy idea. And it's like, okay, we've got something. Let's keep going and make it the best game we can.
Okay, so my question is, because I didn't see it in this gameplay at all, why is it called the Red Lantern?
So the Red Lantern is actually a thing that takes place in a variety of events like the Tour de France and dog sledding. For the person who comes in last, they get a Red Lantern. It's taken from these train cars where you used to have a Red Lantern on the caboose to make sure it was still like attached to the train. And the idea is like there's a light left on so you can find home. And so that's her thing, is she's persevering for herself and not for the prizes. She's going to come in, like, theoretically last, right? There is no prize. It's just to do it, and it's to do it so she knows she can.
All right, I never knew that. That's some amazing information. So how has the PAX impressions been? How have these people who have been demoing this game been reacting to the game?
People seem to really like it. It's been great. People are taking away different pieces that they like from the story and the events. There's been some surprising stuff for us, which is really cool. And, you know, it's great. We get a lot of feedback so we can make a better game. The PAX audience is incredible for just being friendly and helpful.
So 2020 is the planned release for Red Lantern?
Yep, we'll be out later this year. We'll have an announcement trailer a little closer to launch.
Terrific. And my final question, I guess, is why should people play the Red Lantern?
I think if you like, you know, adventure, some strong narrative, and dogs, you can pet all of them. Everybody wants to do that.
Do you ever follow the thing on Twitter, or like, can you pet the dog?
Very much so.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So they'll be very happy about this. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for joining me here on B3 Crew. For more information, where can people find everything about the Red Lantern?
Yeah, you can follow us on Twitter at TimberlineGames.com or Timberline Games. We're not the most active on social media, so sorry about that. Or you can join our newsletter at our website. Just go to Timberline.studio.
Lindsay, thank you once again. Best of luck with the rest of PAX East, and I wish you nothing but the best on the launch of the Red Lantern when it's ready.
Great. Thanks so much.
Listeners, I finally got to experience what it's like to be Jaws. I'm here with Mike over at the Tripwire Interactive booth, where I just tried out Maneater, and man, what a great experience that was. Thank you for joining me here on Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
Good, I'm great. Thanks for playing.
You're welcome. This was a blast. So, of course, I just mentioned Jaws. Like, what other sorts of inspirations did you find when it came to creating a game like Maneater?
Well, I think when the team had the idea for the game, they were obviously fans of some of the old Jaws products, but we wanted to do something that, you know, had more of a game to it versus just the eating people mechanic. So that's kind of one of the funny things we're noticing when people come and check out the game. They think it's just going to be a people eating simulator, and what we've actually built is like an open world action RPG where you play as a shark, and you know, you basically start off as a baby shark, you start leveling up, you start growing, you know, you start experiencing different enemies. You can actually have your shark evolve into weird kind of Franken-shark things, you know, past what nature intended. We've got a story arc in there. We've got seven huge environments, and they all have different, you know, creatures and different bosses that you'll battle. So we wanted to kind of capture the fun of those old Jaws games, but build a much deeper experience.
Right, and as I noticed, like, you start out in the open ocean, but then you get caught, and then you're brought into, like, Florida boonies, what it looks like. And so you get to explore more, and I take it you get to take down, like, all these, like, infamous hunters, correct?
Yeah, I mean, as you're playing, you know, that, you know, you're basically cut from your mother's belly by a guy called Scaly Pete, who's a shark hunter. And so it's, you know, there is a kind of a revenge, you know, aspect to the story. You're trying to get back at him. And as you grow, you know, you have different encounters with him along the way. We kind of do something neat, too. The game, since the shark can't talk and address, you know, we didn't want to have the shark turn to the camera and you know, relay his thoughts. We kind of tell the story through, like, a reality TV show, like a Deadliest Catch sort of thing. And that's narrated by Chris Parnell.
Right, you know? So, Figgis, SNL alumnus, great choice, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. It's just a great way to kind of move the story along, and he kind of, you know, gives you different points, and he shows you what Scaly Pete is up to, and you eventually, you know, work towards having, like, a showdown with him.
I take it with having someone like him in the booth, there is a lot of room for improvisation.
Yeah. I mean, we have a ton of dialogue from him in there, too, so it shouldn't be stale. It's always, you'll always be hearing fresh commentary from him.
Awesome. So what have been some of the big surprises that you have come across when creating a game like this?
Just how much people are into it. Everyone seems to really want a shark game, and if they didn't know that ahead of time, after they play it, we're finding people are like, this is like something that I've always kind of really wanted to play. So it's been an awesome weekend showing off the game here and letting consumers get like their first hands on with it.
So you're here at PAX East. What's been the feedback from all the players here?
Super positive. Just they want to play more. You know, our demo is only about 15 or 20 minutes. It's just kind of the very first part of the game, a little tutorial. Everyone wants to take a deeper dive, no pun intended. And when's it coming out? It's coming out May 22nd. For Epic Game Store on PC, and then PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. And then we also have a Switch version, which will be coming out a little bit later towards the end of the year. We just haven't announced a date yet.
Terrific. And with people playing the game, has there anyone pulled off a move, a maneuver that has surprised you? Like, how did they manage to figure that out?
No, not yet, because, I mean, we haven't revealed that much of the game, so people can't get that far yet. But it's great to see people learning some of the, you know, the basic moves, like the tail whip, for example, which is a lot of fun. You can use that to you know, defeat enemies like smash boats. You could even use it to project enemies into other enemies as almost like a shooting mechanism.
Yeah, I love the whole slingshot effect, especially when you take a human, just slingshot them right across the beach. That was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we're having a lot of fun with it this weekend.
Absolutely. And my buddy, security guy Greg here from the Wicked Anime Podcast Show, what have your thoughts been on this game?
I thought it was absolutely amazing the way it was designed and the fact that you can just go... The movement is so fluid, and that's what attracts me to a game, and I know that's kind of a weird concept, but just being able to be so fluid and just feel like, you know, you're Superman, but in the concept of a shark... You know, it's hard for me to describe, but I actually did really like it.
So, your thoughts on his thoughts?
Well, great. I'm glad to hear you're having such a good time with it. We're getting a lot of feedback like that. People love kind of the whole power fantasy aspect of it. You know, you get to play this, you know, insanely powerful creature of the sea and, like, you know, level it up over time and encounter other, you know, sea creatures and... The control mechanism is really nice, too. It's nice to watch people playing, and everyone seems to be having, like, no problems at all, kind of maneuvering, and it seems to be very intuitive, which is great to see.
Excellent. So I guess my final question for you is, why should people dive into Maneater?
Because there's nothing else quite like it. You know, there's, you know, it's funny, Tripwire, we're known for FPS titles. We do Killing Floor and Rising Storm, and this is something totally new for us. You know, the action RPG route, playing as a shark. It's original, it's fun, there's nothing quite like it. And also, if you ever were a fan of some of the older kind of Jaws products, you know you're going to love this. It's going to bring back memories, but it's a much deeper experience.
Mike, thank you so much for joining me here in Boston Bastardgate. Maneater coming out on PC and on consoles later this year. May for PC. When was it for consoles again?
May 22nd for PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. And then the Nintendo Switch will be later in the year.
Mike, thank you once again. Best of luck with the rest of PAX East. And this was a blast. You are right. This is one of the most unique experiences I've come across, actually, this PAX East. And you guys should be very proud of yourselves for the game that you've created.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.